everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 141. This week we are covering Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 1, episodes 5, Never Kill a Boy on the First Date, and 6, The Pack. As usual, our contact information is as follows. For email, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at re_watchable. This post on Hypeable.com or any Buffy-centric posts on Hypeable, and our Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. I'm Karen, and today I am joined by Caitlin, Kristen, and Mitch. Hi, everyone.
Hey. Hello.
We're going to kick off with some fun facts, and because I haven't thought of one yet, we're going to start with Kristen, because I think you said you had one.
Yes. So in addition to rewatching / watching Buffy for the first time, because that's not enough work for me, I have been rewatching Smallville. And in the last 3 episodes, I've come across 3 different actors who are now like fairly well known. And back then, like, nobody knew who they were. Kobe Smulders from How I Met Your Mother / Avengers. Chris Carmack from Nashville. And Gerard Nolan Funk from Glee / Arrow. He was on The Secret Origins of Felicity Smoke last year. And, like, there are so many actors that started on this show, like, that got one episode and had, like, a guest role. And it's so much fun to go back and see all that.
Jensen Ackles.
Yep. This is the season where he's on, like, the whole season. So it's good fun. And Ian Somerhalder was in season 3 and had a fairly, like, sizable arc. So it's all good fun.
Wow, that's really cool. Okay, Caitlin, what about you?
I'll stick on the rewatching theme, and I spent the last week rewatching the original Star Wars trilogy because I hadn't seen them in a really long time. So that was fun, and I just feel a need to be obnoxiously in love with Luke Skywalker now. So yeah, that was my rewatching.
You know, I think Natalie would love to have a conversation with you about that because she's kind of obsessed with him too.
Oh, all the feels. I don't know why his arc like hit me so hard this time, but by the end I was just like, you are the best character. I love you.
That's cool. See, I've only ever seen the movies once. I want to watch them again, especially since I'm so in love with The Force Awakens, to see if, like, I don't know, to see if I actually care about them, because at this point I don't. So maybe that'll be a good idea.
Do it.
Mitch, what about you?
Well, also sticking on the rewatching theme and Star Wars theme, I have to say that I watched Star Wars The Force Awakens again, this time at the Alamo Draft House, which is like a dine-in theater. And
jealous.
I was
so
jealous. Yeah, it was a very fun time. Unfortunately, I actually have a lower opinion of the movie than I had when I first watched it, because people had been telling me in fandom that when you watch it a second time, you'll appreciate it more. I'm really stuck on, like, the episode 4 parallels. I think that they're too much and it's unoriginal. And I know this is, like, you know, sharpening the pitchforks for myself just saying that, but it's really hard for me to get past that right now.
I had noticed that after the first watch, and it kind of was my biggest complaint about it too.
Yeah. Because production-wise, the movie's done really well. But, I mean, hey, if you ever want to have a good time, go to those Alamo Draft House theaters if you have one in your city, because they are absolutely amazing experiences. Because you get, like, nachos while you watch the movie, or, like, a burger or whatever. It's so cool.
I had no idea that such a thing existed until Kristen told me about it not that long ago. And I'm like, wait a second. Can you go to, like, dinner and a movie at the same time? That's amazing.
Yeah, no, mine wasn't an Alamo Draft House because there isn't one in Ohio. But when I went to visit my brother, we went to the AMC Dine-In Theaters, which was a trip for me. I've never been to one like that either. So it was really fun.
Cool.
Yeah, and they usually have really good quality at least the Alamo Draft House, as far as I know. So it was like the best way for me to see Star Wars. Not quite IMAX, of course, but still, like, better than the small town theater that I first watched it out in the mountains on. It was like they had, I won't get on that, but let's just say the crop didn't even fit the screen when I first watched Star Wars. I thought that that had something to do with like my low opinion of the parallels or something. I don't know, but nope, it was, the quality was great the second time around and I liked it less.
Well, I'm going to be a rebel and I'm not going to talk about what I've been rewatching. I'm instead going to say that I will be in Disney tomorrow in Florida for a whole week. So I'm really excited.
Are you going to Be Our Guest restaurant?
Yep.
Am I what?
Going to that Be Our Guest restaurant in Bell's Castle?
I honestly have no idea because my friend Courtney has planned it all. There's like a spreadsheet and everything, and I'm just allowing her to drag me around wherever she wants and be the planner, and I'm just going to go with the flow. So I'll let you know.
I can see Courtney spreadsheeting out a trip like that, and I appreciate that.
So do I. It's the best. I love it. All right, well, let's get into our discussion of Buffy. We're going to start off with episode 5, Never Kill a Boy on the First Date. And Ariana's synopsis, this is Ariana's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. She writes, in this episode, there is Owen, who is better than Xander, but still not great because it's the 90s and all teen guys are terrible, except for Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who is perfect eternally. Owen likes Buffy because she pretends to read sad poetry and he is sad he lives in the suburbs instead of somewhere exciting like Sylvia Plath's oven. Cordelia also likes Owen, and because it's the 90s, she is a stupid whore. How dare she assert herself? Sexuality, that whore. Sorry, there was other stuff in this episode, I'm sure. Like, for some reason, they all go to the mortuary and those ugly vampires are on the loose for their harvest thing or whatever, but the guy with the tattoos isn't their chosen one. It's the creepy kid who looks like Harry Potter, obviously. In the end, Buffy dumps Owen because his idea of rebellion is staying out until 2 a.m. What a loser. That was a little harsh. Let's see if we can bring it back to the positive side. Ariana does raise an interesting question here, though. She says, is Owen a one-off character? I'm so bummed he was more interesting than Xander. I don't know if I agree with the second half of that, but I think one of the things to point out early on in Buffy is that it is sort of a monster of the week thing, and there are a lot of characters you only meet once. There are a lot of plot lines that are open-ended and yet never get a conclusion necessarily, like you don't revisit them. It's kind of just how Buffy works, but I think if you know that ahead of time, it's not going to bother you too much. But newbies, how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm a Smallville fan, and the Freak of the Week thing was very much, you know, an element of that show, too. So it doesn't bother me in the slightest, especially because they would meet, they would have quote unquote classmates that would just like show up for an episode and then you'd never hear from them again. So,
yeah,
not a big deal.
Mitch?
I like it as long as there are some overarching plot episodes. Like, this episode felt more overarching plot from the fact that this was going back to Voldemort or whatever his name is, kind of doing his thing, like getting the Anointed One and all that ready. And that's cool because I think that you can take a break from the Monster of the Week, a la two of my other favorite shows, iZombie and Veronica Mars, and then go back to like the main plot, like, you know, trying to, I guess, resurrect him. So I'm fine with it as long as it's sprinkled in between with some important stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember, too, that, like, the show focuses pretty deeply on the main characters. So even though people come in and out of their lives, and even though in, like, real high school situations, you would see that person all the time. You might not see them again in the show, but the important thing is like Buffy's growth and Willow and Xander's growth and all of that. So I think there are some overarching themes, especially when you look at the main characters. I want to go back really quick and just say, like, overall thoughts on this episode. Caitlin, I know season one is pretty rough for a lot of people. I was talking to Kristen earlier yesterday when we were watching this season one, like I vividly remember so many of these episodes. So it's really endearing to me. This one, not one of my favorites. What do you think of it?
I like this one significantly more than the one we're going to talk about next. So I cannot stand that episode, but
oh no.
But you know, I don't mind this episode. I look back on season one and see that it's significantly lower quality than the episodes are going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just something endearing about its campiness, I guess, that I guess knowing what's coming, I can appreciate it more. So hopefully the newbies will appreciate that once they have some hindsight to look at. But yeah. I don't dislike this episode.
Okay, good. Mitch, we haven't been on an episode together yet, except the Well, no, you weren't even on the intro, were you?
No.
Some audio. So, hi, welcome to Buffy. Hope you like it here. what did you think of this episode?
I like it because I like, okay, like, this is so cheap. Karen, I forgive you a little bit for liking things like Power Rangers and Mortal Kombat. I'm sure you like Power Rangers if you like Mortal Kombat. Is that an okay assumption to make here?
It was like a childhood thing. Yeah, I liked Power Rangers. I mean, if you want to talk Power Rangers, talk to Kristen.
Well, I'm saying, like, I liked this episode simply because it was bad, but I liked it. Like, I liked this guy who talks in, like, weird sort of like Yoda speech, and like the whole bus scene, like where he's just kind of creepishly standing up. That camp is funny to me because it's like no one takes it seriously, not even the people in Mortal Danger. Like as they're dying, they're probably still laughing at this weird guy, and I like that kind of camp. It kind of feels, oddly enough, like kind of a Cabin in the Woods horror humor to me, and I really appreciate that. But it's bad. It's not even like it's trying to be to be comedy, so I shouldn't like it. But I mean, hey. Sometimes it happens, Karen, as we both know.
Yeah. You can't help what you love, Mitch. You just can't. I think, honestly, I think the humor is quite intentional, and I think the tone of Buffy is pretty specific. And I think going forward, like, you're just going to have to accept that sort of weird, bad, campy humor side to it. It makes the show a lot more fun, especially since it can get really dark. And I've said this before, like, you kind of need that humor, and you kind of need Buffy's like one-liners as she's stabbing the vampire, because it's just like it would devour your soul. So hopefully that becomes endearing like it has to me and Caitlin, and not horrible. But
Yes, it does have a certain endearment to it, I have to admit. And I didn't think it was going to, from the fact that I had seen season one already a couple months ago. And just having seen that, I was ready to quit Buffy, as I heard many other people write in originally. You know, like, oh, I've watched season one and two of Buffy and then I quit. But I'm totally sticking through it because I can see now on a second watch of the first season where these characters are going to grow, because I can just tell like where they're setting them up now. And I think hints from superfans aren't hurting. Like when I hear something about, I'm not going to say anyone in particular, but, you know, this character has so much more coming on. You'll be amazed to see what they have going on. And I think that hope is what's keeping me going right now.
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember that, like, Buffy has a huge following, an enormous following, and a lot of people on the Hypeable staff, you know, like, we're all friends, so a lot of your friends really love this show, and there must be a reason why we love it so much, you know? It's not going to be absolutely terrible. I mean, I know I like terrible things, but Caitlin doesn't like terrible things, so trust her.
Yeah, I have good taste.
Yeah. Exactly. One thing I do want to talk about is Ariana put in here that the show's really starting to piss her off with the misogyny. It's very Bella's not like other girls, and Buffy's line, wow, Cordelia's hips are wider than I thought. She says it's very 90s, making girls fight over a guy and then making fun of each other's looks in front of him. I disagree with this because I think this is very typical, like, high school banter, and Buffy and Cordelia are quickly becoming like mortal enemies, and it's, you know, they're fighting over the same guy. I think this is a very typical response. And of course we'd like people to act better than that, but especially when you were in high school, if you didn't like somebody, or if somebody was going after your ex-boyfriend or something like that, you know, it's very typical to respond to be like, oh, she's so ugly. What does, you know, he see in her anyway? I think it's just the way things happened. So this really doesn't bother me. But Caitlin, looking back, you know, is this becoming an issue for you?
I mean, not really, because I feel like at 16 years old, my feminism wasn't particularly evolved. So, and I think it's also showing contrasts, like Buffy's big concern is this boy and her confrontation with Cordelia, when her real issue is all this stuff with the vampires. So it's kind of showing, like, have some perspective about what the issues really are. And she's trying to balance them. And one is literally life and death, and one sort of feels like it because she's 16. And that's just kind of how it is when you're a teenager. So it doesn't honestly bother me that much, because I wasn't particularly evolved at 16, and I don't think most people are.
Yeah, I think these are just very typical concerns. Kristen, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, when you're in high school, hormones and emotions are running rampant, and like, her being upset about this, you know, this guy is clearly interested in her, and Cordelia's sticking her nose in where she doesn't need to. And I can totally see why Buffy is, like, annoyed. And when you're annoyed as a teenager, you poke fun at people. It's a thing you do. Like, everyone does it, whether you do it behind their back or in front of their face. So, you know, it feels more realistic. I think if you did a high school show without two girls kind of going at it ever, it would feel really disingenuous. Like, that, unfortunately, it's a part of growing up. It's something that happens that I think everyone deals with in one way or another. So, yeah, it doesn't really bother me, especially since there are shows who, like, harp on this continuously and make love triangles a huge thing. And while Buffy kind of has a little bit of a triangle thing happening, it's not the central focus at all. So having an episode where Cordelia and Buffy are kind of, like, rubbing shoulders with each other as they're trying to get this guy's attention doesn't bother me.
And I think Buffy is still very much growing into herself as a person. And this, you know, like you were saying, Caitlin, like, these are the things she's concerning herself with right now. Whether or not she should, obviously we have a different opinion to Buffy's, but I think, you know, she's still very raw and naive and innocent, and she's trying to be that normal person, and normal people go on dates. And that's why she's concerned with this, and I think she's why she's reacting the way she is. So hopefully moving forward, you guys will kind of see this as something a bit more natural and not like, oh, wow, this show is misogynistic, because the show's about Buffy, and Buffy is a really badass character. And, you know, maybe this is something that it'll grow out of. We'll just have to see moving forward.
And I appreciate that it even seems to subvert the expectation that a girl cast that looks like Buffy does, you know, this, like, pretty petite blonde, oh, of course she's going to go on dates and have, like, fun times, I don't know, parties, whatever. It kind of reminds me of the casting of Veronica Mars, because you would think that in her, but they're both kind of, like, more outcasts, and they can't live normal lives because when they try, you know, the world just kind of implodes on them. And I appreciate that, because it turns everything on its head about what you think of when you see a high school cast of hot 20-somethings. You're like, oh, maybe they're not just all about, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Maybe they can have more depth to them. I like it.
Good. I'm glad. One of the most interesting things that we learned in this episode, we actually did get a bit of information in history, is that Giles is at least a third-generation watcher, and his father told him about becoming a watcher when he was 10 years old. Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
I mean, what do you do with that information?
I was 10 years old, I still believe Pokemon existed. Like, come on.
Well, I'm trying to remember what Giles said he wanted to do before he learned about being a watcher.
I forget. A fighter pilot or a grocer?
Yeah. I mean, poor kid is like 10 years old and is like, I want to fly planes, and yeah, I'm going to be in the army. It's going to be awesome. And then
bag groceries.
Right. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like, his dad tells him about this whole watcher thing, and it's like, oh, okay. Like, I'm sure it was thrilling to hear about, but like, just kind of, I feel bad for 10-year-old Giles, who's like, yeah, maybe not a fighter pilot.
Well, it also raises a question of, I mean, we know that the Slayer is a chosen one. So what does that mean about being the Slayer's watcher? Like, is it a specific bloodline or like, it's an interesting question that it raises to me.
Maybe there's two bloodlines where the Slayer is always in the same bloodline as is the Watcher. They're not related, or maybe they are. I don't know. That'd be interesting. I think I could be down for that. That makes sense. I want to know, like, I think that it would be really interesting to learn what's going on with the previous Slayer, because that was in the movie, and I don't know anything about that. So is that something important? Is that still considered Buffy, even though she's a different cast? Like, canonically, is she still considered Buffy?
The movie
does
not exist in this world.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Joss Whedon kind of retconned it when he took over.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, I know nothing about the other Slayers, and I'm really excited to figure out, like, what if – this would be really fun. What if, like, Buffy was always the Slayer, kind of like Doctor Who? He's always the Time Lord, and it's just kind of like a reincarnation kind of deal. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be interesting. This is really hard. No comment.
I know. What does it mean to be a chosen one in the Buffyverse?
Yeah. I also really like to think about how this has affected Giles specifically, you know, finding out that he's supposed to be a watcher at 10. How has this informed literally every decision he's ever made in his whole life? What kind of relationship does he have with his father? You know, did he know his grandfather, et cetera, et cetera? So I, for one, because it has been a little while since I've watched Buffy, am looking forward to re-exploring his backstory and kind of taking in that information a second time and figuring out more deeply what it means and kind of coming up with my own headcanon and stuff. I'm really looking forward to that. But let's talk about Angel, because... as Ariana correctly points out, he's a bit of a Stefan Salvatore here. He broods a lot. What do you guys think of him?
I think we mean Stefan Salvatore is a bit of an angel.
Ah, true, true. That is very true.
Angel did come first.
Yes. Kristen,
even
you're
the books
big...
were written before, excuse me, no, Buffy came out before the books of the Vampire Diaries were written, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I would trust you of all people on this because you're like my go-to Vampire Diaries master.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, you like the Vampire Diaries, or at least before it got batshit crazy, so.
Yeah, I did quite like the first, you know, 3.5-4 seasons before things went nuts. And I seeing this comparison, like, it made me think, it's been a while since I've watched season one of Vampire Diaries, and like, looking back, I'm like, yeah, you know, Angel and Stefan have a lot of similarities, like just the lurking and the hair and like just the air of mystery. Like, Stefan tried to kind of stay out of things and like not get involved. And I can totally see Angel in that role, too. Like, he's giving Buffy the absolute necessary information, like, you need to look out for this. And then he steps back and tries to stay out of it. Like, he doesn't want to get involved. He's trying to be there and do his job, but not like do his job. So I'm quite enjoying it. I'm sure we'll get a lot more of Angel. So I'm holding out hope that when we finally like get to know him and know more about him, that it's as fun as I'm hoping it is.
I was pleasantly surprised, not surprised, I was excited that he was far less cheesy than he was in the first couple of episodes. He's kind of growing into a bit of that Angel that Caitlin and I know, which is nice because he was pretty cringeworthy in the two-part opener.
I don't know. I love him in the opener too. I just, he's so unhelpful.
Like, yeah,
he seems like he should be like the wise mentor figure somehow, and he's coming across and he's not giving enough information for Buffy to do anything with. Just like, you should be worried. Peace out. Have my jacket.
Exactly. Like, he just lets her call that one, like, fork guy. And I'm like, you're not going to tell her anything about him? Like, how is that helpful?
Yeah, he's like, oh, there's a big threat out there. It's like, you couldn't just take 5 seconds to say there's a vampire with a claw for a hand? Like, really? So his unhelpfulness cracks me up, basically. Like, he's supposed to be all mysterious and Buffy is falling for this mysteriousness. And he's actually really unhelpful.
Yeah. And speaking of Buffy falling for him, Ariana asks why she likes him other than the fact that he's obviously quite good looking, because he does lurk a lot. He does brood a lot. He is pretty unhelpful. My opinion, and this isn't necessarily like factual or anything, I just think the two of them have that sort of connection, like whether you call it true love or you call it, you know, just like, I don't know, recognizing each other's souls, as creepy as that is, like, or, you know, as weird and cheesy as that is. I think that there's just this undeniable thing between them, and I think you see it from the very beginning. They're intrigued by each other. And I think especially Angel seeing the type of person Buffy is. I mean, Buffy doesn't really know anything about Angel, but the reverse isn't quite true. And I've always found that kind of captivating to watch on screen.
Though admittedly slightly creepy.
I mean, a little bit. But, you know, Kristen,
I have a newbie theory here about Buffy and like her sexuality. Would you agree that it seems like men are attracted more to Buffy in general than like Cordelia or something? Like, doesn't there seem to be, I think the term succubus is there, like there's like some kind of like, you know, innate charm to, I think, even being a slayer, that maybe you'll gather more people around you that will want to protect you. Like, that's part of the survival tactic, and you don't even know it. That'd be cool.
Did you just call Buffy a succubus?
That's probably not the right word. I don't really know what I'm looking for. Just someone who attracts people, either by being sexy or attractive or intelligent or charismatic.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it just has more to do with Buffy being a very, like, honest, realistic person. Like, she doesn't seem to put up a front. If she doesn't like you, like, you're gonna hear it. Like, Cordelia has no, I don't think, has any like illusions that Buffy wants to be her bestie. Like, she knows it. And so, like, when Buffy is friends with someone or, you know, meets someone new, like, she's a pretty genuine person. So I have a feeling it probably has more to do with that than anything else.
Yeah, more of a personality thing rather than like a lore thing.
Yeah, at least that's what I've gotten out of it so far. Whether we find out later, you know, for now, that's what I'm attributing it to.
Yeah. I mean, maybe people are just attracted to power in general. It doesn't have to be the fact that she's the Slayer. It could just be that they see that she can toss a cheerleader across a room without even blinking. And, like, that's just a thing. Or break open locked doors by just coughing like you're opening up a soda can in the movie theater.
And then last but certainly not least in this episode, we get the Anointed One, and we get this little innocent-looking child who Buffy will not recognize as, like, that's sort of the whole point behind it. She thinks she's got the one. She thinks she stopped the prophecy. And then we realize, you know, there was an ace in the deck, and it's this little kid. What do you guys think about that twist?
Like, I'm kind of glad it wasn't the obvious play and that it was this guy who they set up the entire time to be the Anointed One and was rambling in many ways. But I also, like, I feel weird about it being a kid because, you know, as we see in the next episode, Buffy doesn't seem to be afraid to do things. So now I'm kind of afraid that I'm going to, like, see this kid have to be put down at some point. And now, yeah, I'm a little weirded out about it.
Well, I don't know what's going on with this kid. It's not clear to me what happens in this episode to make him the Anointed One. Does a superfan have the retrospective to be able to explain, like, I don't know, was there like a process that went on, or was it just like, you're it, here we go? I don't know what the Anointed One's even meant to do. It's just kind of like, I'm confused.
Well, there is purposefully some mystery to this, because Giles is kind of not even 100% sure what it means to be an anointed one. He assumes it's some sort of big warrior for the master, but that's kind of all he gets out of his reading. But all we know is that five people are going to die, and out of the ashes, an unexpected anointed one will rise the Slayer won't recognize, and that's the child. Okay. So whatever that means, like, we didn't get a real great explanation of it, and I think it's supposed to still be a mystery at this point.
Okay. Well, no, then I'm with it, other than the fact that I really liked Pork and Beans guy, and I'm sad that he wasn't the anointed one.
Oh my god, he's ridiculous.
So listen, take off all that vampire makeup.
Wow, Mitch. I mean, I can't judge because I still really love the master. Not that I'm attracted to him in any which way. Just to make that clear. But
Karen talks very, very kindly about the master. Every time he comes on screen, she kind of goes, oh.
I know he's horrible. I know he is horrible, but he is freaking hilarious and so overdramatic, and it's kind of endearing in a homicidal sort of way, and I just, I can't help myself.
He's the, like, epitome of camp villain.
Yes. Yes, he is, which is probably
you got something in your eye, pokes out eyeballs.
I mean, that is comedy gold, you guys. So funny.
Did you get Three Stooges, Karen?
I've never actually, like, watched them. I mean, I know of them and I've seen clips and stuff, but I'm sure I would love them. Okay, before I embarrass myself further, let's move on to favorite scenes. My favorite scene is just Angel's intense brooding, especially at the Bronze, when you have, like, Owen and Buffy in the forefront, and in the background, he's standing there between them, just staring them down, no emotion on his face, and you're just like, you're really creepy right now.
shot was beautiful. Like, yeah. The two of them are, like, talking and arguing, and Angel is just perfectly in line in the middle of them, so your eye kind of goes to him and it's like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Caitlin, what about you?
Mine was the kind of end scene with after Buffy has broken up with Owen and Giles sits down and tells her about being the third generation watcher, and I love that because you can tell Buffy is expecting and I told you so, and it never comes. He just kind of gives her a little insight into his own life, like, I understand you, and actually, I think you're doing a pretty good job at this so far. Like, I love the way their relationship is developing, and this conversation isn't quite what you expect it to be or what Buffy expects it to be, and it shows just a really good relationship developing between them.
Especially because it was made clear in the Praying Mantis episode that Buffy doesn't get praised a lot. She really is always feeling like she's at the bottom. And whenever somebody does praise her, I think she takes it very seriously. And I think she needs that sort of confidence boost. I mean, she comes off as confident, but she is quite insecure. And I love that Giles can recognize that. And even though he can be quite critical of her sometimes because he wants her to stay safe. You know, he has to push her really hard because she's the Slayer and she has to save the entire world. He can also recognize when she needs those moments where he's just like, you did a good job. And yeah, I really like seeing that play out too. Mitch, what's your favorite scene?
Mine is every single time that Owen is precious, which is every single second that he spends on screen. I love Owen so much. I just can't.
He's not like other boys. He's sensitive.
He's so sensitive, but he's still like sexy, you know? He still rocks it.
Kristen, what about you?
For me, it's the watch scene. Everything about the watch scene. You've got Xander standing at his locker giving Buffy like the weirdest looks. Like, it's not even like radiating like jealousy. He's like staring her down, like what is happening here? Why are you talking to him? Like, what is going on? Like, it's like he almost doesn't understand. It's great. And then you get Owen putting his watch on Buffy's wrist. And, like, it seems like a really cute, you know, just silly thing. And then they zoom in on the watch. And it's like a watch a 12-year-old, like, 6-year-old would wear. Like, it's so great. Just everything about it just made me giggle.
Well, Owen's watch was the pocket watch.
Oh, was it?
And totally Xander's was the Tweety watch.
Okay, well then that's what I was...
I mean, it makes it even better because of course Owen would have a pocket watch.
Okay, I must have like blinked or something because I didn't even notice. I just
it was fast.
Great. And yeah, okay. So, but anyway, still my favorite.
Okay, favorite lines. Mine was when Willow said about Owen, he can brew for 40 minutes straight. I've clocked him.
You do a decent Allison Hannigan impression.
Thanks. Okay, do you want to know a fun fact?
Yes.
I have a widow's peak, and I hate my widow's peak, but my celebrity lookalike is Allison Hannigan. I totally took one of those tests one time, and it told me it was her, and I believe it. And so I've definitely gone to the hairdresser with a picture of Allison Hannigan and be like, make my hair look like this, because we both have widow's peaks, and widow's peaks are hard to style, just in case anybody wants to know.
Oh, Karen, I can't say how happy I am that you just said those two things, that you got it styled after Allison Hannigan, that you have widow's peak, because I can relate. You wouldn't think so. But no one knows what widow's peaks are unless you have one. And you're like the first person in a very long time to like bring up the term before I have. So thank you, Karen. And also, I brought a picture of Caitlin. I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, so you can hate me for this. Jared Padalecki. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Oh, I'm impressed. Good. I never do that right. I took a picture of him from House of Wax, and I wanted to have that, like, swooshy hairstyle. And that's how I, like, designed my hair for, like, 3 years.
Okay, then. You had Sam Winchester hair.
I absolutely did. But, like, specifically House of Wax. Because, like, yeah, like, Sam Winchester has some good hair, but it changes episode to episode, kind of, whatever. But, like, that movie, it's all one hairstyle, and I just really liked it. He had a good hair day.
Anyway, widow peaks aside, because I hate them. They're the devil. Caitlin, what's your favorite line?
So I went with the classic from this episode of Buffy. If the apocalypse comes, beat me. Just, it's classic.
Beepers. Man.
Impossible.
Oh, pagers.
Mitch, what about you?
Well, I love it when Owen comes by, kind of the watch scene, he wants to, like, get Buffy on a date at the lockers, and he asks her if she can come along, and she tries to act busy, so she goes, oh, well, let's see, if I arrange that and push that to sure, that'll work. I'm like, oh, come on, Buffy, you're not fooling anyone.
She likes to think she is, though.
But she was kind of busy, so she's basically pushing off the apocalypse to go on a date.
Sounds like Buffy. And Kristen, you might have the best part of this whole episode.
Yeah, so this anointed guy on the bus and elsewhere says a lot of nonsense just over and over again and all kinds of different sorts of nonsense. But my favorite bit was when he just said over and over again a couple of times, he was like, pork and beans, and it's just the only line that stuck in my head from this episode. So I was like, nope, it has to be my line. Just pork and beans.
I'm glad you called him that. Well, I called him that because you took that line. I looked down and I was like, oh, yeah, he's the pork and beans guy.
Yep. I'm pretty sure that's how I'll remember him forever. Yeah.
Did the Buffy transcripts call him the anointed guy? If so, then you need to fix that to pork and beans guy ASAP.
That's not even I have no idea what they called him. That was just the name I gave him in my head.
Besides, he should be pork and beans guy, though.
Yeah. Be more appropriate.
Okay, let's move on to episode 6, The Pack. In this episode, Willow is, like, in love with Xander, even though he is kind of a douche most of the time. But then he gets put under a spell by hyenas, and suddenly he's a total douche, like, all of the time. It's fine, though. We forgive him because it's the 90s, and angry white boys like to whine about the friend zone. Later, some creepy-ass teens eat a pig. Then the principal. In the end, there are a few repercussions, and we close on a walk and talk. Not completely inaccurate, though I am interested to discuss Xander at this point. First thing I would like to point out is what Kristen pointed out to me, and that Ian Bailey is Kyle, aka August, from Once Upon a Time. I didn't recognize him.
Well, as I told Karen, he, around the same time, did a guest stint on Dawson's Creek, and he looked very much like he did in this episode. So the second he walked on screen, I was like, oh my God, yellow shirt guy. That's August. Oh my God. And yeah, so I was really happy to see him because it's good fun to like keep an eye on people who you know now and like see them back in the day. It's always good fun.
We actually
this episode
so that we could watch it and appreciate his pants because he had some sweet plaid pants on.
Oh yeah.
This is potential to be a really dumb question, but was Sarah Jessica Parker on that's not the right actress. Wow. Help me out here, guys. Who plays Buffy?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
God, three names, Sarah words. Sarah names. That's tough. Okay, Sarah, wasn't she on Dawson's Creek? Like, did she guest star or something?
I could
have sworn she was like a major character in that show at one point.
No, I don't think so. There's I can never think of her name. No, I don't believe Sarah Michelle Gellar was ever on Dawson's Creek.
Because that was Kate Middleton.
Michelle Williams is a blonde who's on the show.
Not Kate Middleton. Ah.
Huh?
The one that married Tom Cruise.
Katie Holmes.
I'm so bad at names today. Please forgive me, everyone.
Okay. Anyway, very exciting, but let's move on to some plot stuff because Ariana is wondering why Willow likes Xander because apparently he's terrible always, not just in this episode. And she says, in the last episode, he basically called Buffy a slut if she kissed Owen on the first date and then was gross and watched her change in the mirror. As a newbie, Kristen, I know you have some thoughts about this. So what were you thinking?
Yeah, first of all, I don't think Xander's always terrible. I find him endearing and sweet, and he's a teenage boy, so they have issues. But when I read this comment about him basically calling Buffy a slut in the last episode, that is not how I read the situation at all. He was trying to talk Buffy out of this crush on Owen that she seemed to have, and in doing so was like, you don't want to kiss him. And then when he, you know, got to talk to Owen later and said, she doesn't even like to kiss boys. Like he likes her. He likes Buffy. So of course he's going to try and like talk her out of liking this guy or try and, you know, weasel his way in between them so that nothing happens. So in no way did I think Xander was being like mean or misogynistic about it. Like I thought he was just, you know, being a teenage boy who likes a girl. And so when I read this, it just didn't sit well with me. Like I feel like Xander is a lot more well-meaning than it seems like Ariana has seen so far. Like he just doesn't seem like he's out to hurt or be mean to anyone unless he's, you know, possessed by a demonic hyena.
Caitlin, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't have particularly friendly Xander thoughts, so...
Okay. I'm interested. Honestly, I am interested to know... Because, and I talked about this, I think you were on that episode too with Natalie, like, I really like Xander. I've always liked Xander, but rewatching parts, being a bit older and kind of more aware of maybe some better characterizations, I'm wondering if I'm still going to like Xander moving forward. So,
yeah, I didn't dislike Xander when I first watched the show. It's not until I've gotten older and have done some rewatching that I've gone, actually, that's really not okay behavior. And for the episodes that we've watched so far, I keep going back to the witch episode when Buffy is like kind of coming out of that hyper energy spell and she's like, you know, I like you, Xander, because you're like one of the girls, which, you know, whatever. But then she says, you know, most guys would want to be nice to me so that I would go on a date with them. Like she starts saying that she likes that he is not trying to get into her pants, basically. Mm-hmm. About their friendship. And that's exactly what he's doing. And he hears that and doesn't care and continues to be kind of gross. And I get that he's being a teenage boy, but I just find that teenage boy behavior in general maybe not okay. So maybe we shouldn't be excusing it as him being a teenage boy and say maybe teenage boys need to stop being kind of gross towards women.
Okay, so Mitch, as a former teenage boy, what do you have to say for yourself? I'm just kidding. Tough. What do you think about this, honestly?
It's tough to not like Xander, in my opinion, from the fact that I was a teenage boy and I was very stupid, very stupid toward many people that I shouldn't have been. Like, I found myself being a bully when I shouldn't have. I found myself being over sexual when I shouldn't have. I found myself like being a class clown when I shouldn't have. It was just kind of like growing up as a teenage boy. Sometimes I feel like you're pressured to have something because it's like, well, if you're not strong, you better be smart and funny or something. And then that pressure kind of goes away as you grow up and you realize that those high school pressures aren't as important. But when you're in high school, it starts to feel like for everyone that there's a spotlight on you to be something special. And I think that Xander tries too hard. He tries too hard to get people to like him, and he tries too hard to be funny, and his jokes don't always land. And that's why I like it, because I find him to be a realistic teenage boy.
Yeah, that's sort of my main point, is like, whether or not you like this behavior, I do think it's realistic. And I think there are other shows out there now, and I keep going back to Teen Wolf just because Teen Wolf is a very similar genre show, and they've done some pretty groundbreaking things in the way that they've designed their characters and the world. You know, like, there is no homophobia in Teen Wolf, etc. Like, a lot of the typical behaviors that you would think high school students would have aren't always there. I think that's very purposeful. I mean, it is. It is purposeful on Teen Wolf's part. I don't think they were attempting to do that here. I think that, you know, realistically, this is how boys act when they like somebody. And, you know, girls can act like this too. Like, you kind of get a bit stupid when you have a crush on somebody and you flounder and you do some things that you probably shouldn't do.
Especially in high school.
Yeah. Is that an excuse? Maybe not. But I think it's the reason. And right now, I don't have a problem with it. Moving forward, I'm going to be very interested to see if my opinion of that changes. So I think we'll just have to wait. But the interesting thing in this episode, and I think the reason why I like it so much, and Caitlin, I'm interested to know why you don't like it, is the complete 180 in Xander's character. He becomes incredibly like alpha male. He's mean. He's sort of like this bad boy, hypersexualized primal being. And I think, you know, Nicholas Brendan's acting in this episode is really good. And I like that they changed a character who has been very consistent so far and has been that very typical kind of best friend, weird, sort of awkward guy, and made him into everything that he's not for the sake of this episode. Is this one of the reasons why you didn't like this episode, or is that one of the highlights for you?
Honestly, I don't buy it as a 180 in Xander's character. I think that's okay. Internally how he feels. He goes directly after Buffy because he has these feelings for her, and he is just significantly more aggressive about it. So I'm not convinced that it's totally out of character for him. Like, out of what, like, maybe deep down he would like to do something like that. But if it were complete 180, I feel like he would just be doing, I don't know, like, something completely unrelated. But he's going after things that he actually, we know that he consciously wants. And maybe he is unconsciously a little more intense about it. And then the spell gives him the space to act on those desires or whatever. But I'm not entirely sure I buy it as a 180, maybe like a 120 or 100. I don't know. I don't think it's a total spin on him for me. But the thing I don't like about this episode is just the concept is dumb, I think. I don't like the animal possession and the teenagers eating a pig and a human being. Like, it doesn't work for me. So it's just the concept doesn't work for me.
Okay. That's funny. I love it so much. I really do. It's bad. Kristen, I know you said you find Xander endearing. What do you think about what Caitlin said in terms of it not being a total 180 in his character.
Okay. Eventually, I will stop making Smallville references, so I'm sorry right now.
I doubt
it's what's,
that.
It's
I
what's
highly
fresh
doubt
in my
that.
Brain. Shut up. No, on Smallville, there are a handful of episodes where Clark is under the influence of red meteor rock, and every time he is like in contact with it, it's like being drunk. Like it brings all of the like surface. The stuff that he wishes he could just tell people and brings it to the surface. So, like, rather than, you know, being the kind-hearted, sweet guy who keeps everything internalized, he, like, goes after the girls that he wants, and he acts like a jerk, and he buys a bunch of stuff he shouldn't because he never is allowed to have, like, extraneous things. So that's kind of how I feel about Xander in this episode. Like, he's not necessarily acting completely out of character because... yes, he is interested in Buffy, and in this episode, you do see him kind of narrow in on Buffy, and he's friends with Willow, so he doesn't, you know, he doesn't necessarily, like, see her, as he kind of talks about seeing her as one of the guys, like, we don't, he, on the surface, would, you, if you were just looking at a surface view of him, I think you would see him ignoring Willow, or, you know, pushing her aside, to get to Buffy because that's the person he wants. So that's kind of how I saw this episode playing out. Like, this isn't how Xander would choose to be because he has friendship that he with Willow that it, you know, means something to him. You can tell. But when it, you know, when you're in animalistic mode here, it becomes less important because, you know, animals don't really like. Animals like hyenas especially don't really have friends, so that's kind of how I reasoned it.
Yeah, I think, Caitlin, you bring up a really good point in that it's not completely out of his character because he's had this these underlying desires before. I think it's important to note, though, that even if he feels the way that he feels, the fact that he's not acting on them normally, that he's not as aggressive as he is in this episode, does say something for his character. Maybe this is just me being really defensive over Xander and being like, no, he's so good. But I really do think that, you know, it's his choice not to be that kind of a dick every day of the week that makes a huge difference here. But Mitch, what do you think about all of this?
Yeah, I think that especially when he's making fun of, apparently I didn't even see him on screen, an overweight kid, that is just so not Xander. And I don't think that that's his personality coming through. And I think that's even where Caitlin would agree that that's part of his 120 that he changed. Then again, though, I can also agree with Caitlin on the fact that, and I don't mean to speak for you, Caitlin, if you don't feel that way. But I also agree with Caitlin on the fact that he just seems like he's, his grossness is starting to come out. I don't know. What did Adriana call him? Like a teenage white boy that likes complaining about being in the friend zone. Yeah, he's that to me. And it's not that I don't know, like that, but I still just appreciate it in the same right because I think that this isn't like something of just the 90s. This is something still atypical of today's society. This is what some teenage boys legitimately do act like when they would like a woman, and it's creepy, and they have to learn how to respect the people they like before they turn them away. And I think that this is hopefully going to serve as a bit of a lesson for Xander about how he should treat Buffy in particular when he likes her, that, you know, you can't just jump on top of her and say, this is what you've wanted all along. That's very, very bad. And that was very creepy, by the way. I can't get over that. That was, gave me really gross chills.
Yeah. Well, really interesting discussion and I think Xander is going to continue to be quite a topic of discussion. So if any listeners have additional thoughts, please let us know. But this episode got real dark and real weird and terrible because the possessed kids ate a pig alive and then ate the principal. And let me tell you, oh man, you know, I miss him. He was a good character. He was bumbling and awkward, but he just added something to the show that I'm just really sad they got rid of him so quickly. But let me tell you that watching Kristen watch this episode was fantastic. She was like appalled that they ate the pig and then that they ate the principal. And it was great. I was so excited to be there.
I really wanted someone to save the pig. Like, I thought Buffy was going to, like, save the day. Like, because she was so... She saved, like, caught him in the hallway and was so sweet to him. And I was like, she's going to save him. It's okay. And then, like, that happened. And she didn't, you know, even... She wasn't even aware of it. And then when the principal thing went down, I, again, expected her to, like, storm in the room and stop this. And no, they ate him. And it kind of... It shocked me that the show went there because, yeah, that's dark, man. Like, that's really, really dark. But, yeah, you know, it would have been what these possessed people would do, I guess. And so, you know, I got what they were going for, but yeah, really, really dark. Cannibalism, man. That's not something you play with.
Mitch, were you surprised they went there?
I guess I was at first when I first watched this episode. This time around, I think knowing it was coming, I had less room to be shocked. And it's sad that I should ever say that human beings eating another human being shouldn't be shocking. But I was just like, okay, status quo. Like, I already knew they were hyenas. Like, this is totally coming the whole episode if you look for it and you know what's coming. They're, like, you know, drooling at the mom with the baby and all that after this, too. And it just was like, cool. Like, I get it. But the first time around when I watched it, I think the most shocking part is when one of the two girl hyenas, I guess we can call them that, scratches him, Flutie, before mm-hmm. they eat them. And it's so violent and just... His reaction is so heartbreaking because you feel for the man. He's trying to be a good principal. He's terrified of these kids, but he's not going to show them fear because then they'll eat that up. But he had no choice because they ate him up. And it's just so horrible.
Oh, my God. You bring up the baby. When the baby came on screen, Karen can attest. I went, oh, my God, they aren't. Karen, if they eat a baby on the show, I don't know if I can continue. Like, oh, my God. Like, I freaked out because I thought it was just a student at first. It looked like a backpack. And I was like, oh, this, you know, poor girl. Keep walking. Get out of there. Like, as soon as she turned around and I saw the baby, I kind of freaked. So, yeah, this episode was definitely weird.
I always have the assumption that babies are safe on any TV 14 show because even on like The Walking Dead, I can't think of like a time that anyone younger than like 12 or 11 was killed. It seems like there's like this unsung rule that you need to not touch anything that isn't mature enough to make its own decisions. Like if you harm that in like a TV 14 show, like that's not even okay. And the fact that I would say The Walking Dead even is reluctant to do something like that, I think attests to the fact that I wasn't concerned for the baby. I was like, I know she's going to get away because she has the baby. She has character immunity.
Normally I would have agreed with you, but they had just eaten the principal. I had given up like all hope that the show wasn't gonna take it there. So yeah, I was scared for the poor baby.
I mean, at least we didn't have to see the aftermath of Principal Flutie. I was scared we were gonna have to like go in his office and Buffy would have to like check it out to see it for herself or something. I'm glad they didn't go there.
Yeah. Okay, so what's worse? Them eating the pig or them eating Principal Flutie?
Principal Flutie.
I'm with the pig.
Emotionally or like objectively?
Emotionally.
Emotionally the pig, but objectively the human.
I'm always curious because you know how like in war movies, you know, there's like 1,000 people dying on screen and then the one horse gets it and everybody's like, not the horse. I'm just wondering if it was that kind of situation.
Yeah,
totally.
I mean, I was definitely attached to the poor thing. Herman, yeah. Is it? I think it was Herman.
I think there's this innocence about animals where you can't help but feel badly for them because everything is so much out of their control. But I would have to go with Principal Flutie just because I really liked the dude and I'm really sad that he's gone now.
He was so well-meaning.
He was. Yeah.
I don't know, Karen. When I hear that Arms of an Angel by Sarah McLachlan and those sad-eyed puppies come on TV, I feel worse for them than I feel for any other human beings. Like, bar none. So I'm with the pig here.
That's emotional manipulation. They're trying to punch you right in the heart with those commercials.
Yeah.
Kristen, you have a follow-up question with this episode.
Yes, and this comes to play in a lot of, especially genre shows, but after the other episode we watched with, or that we watched before this episode, the one with the praying mantis lady, after that and this, where the teacher got eaten, whether it was by dogs or children possessed by hyenas, why would anyone ever want to work at Sunnydale? Like, two teachers died in the same school year in the school. Like, why would anyone ever volunteer to work there?
It sounds like Sunnydale, I feel like that's a name used for, like, retirement homes or something. And for, like, horror movies even. So I feel like there'd be some really good fan art out there once I'm a total, like, once I've watched the entire show that I can find of, like, I don't know, like a t-shirt, like, say, job applications open at Sunnydale, and then, like, you know, some, like, references to, like, all of the teachers or whatever else that have happened is there, all the murders, and it being, like, such an obvious thing that, like, the school is so horrible, and it's almost a trope within the show itself.
Yeah, I like how at the end Buffy was like, you know, hope they don't ask what happened to the previous one, because true story. But yeah, unfortunately, suspend the disbelief. Like, it happens in Teen Wolf a lot too, where yes, it's just like, maybe they pay them really, 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 really well, but even that doesn't seem worth it.
Well, they addressed it with, like, the student body and how they react to these things, and like, mm-hmm, they just don't think about it because they can't. Like, if they tried to, like, their brains would short circuit or whatever. So they just don't.
Well, that's where I can appreciate Monster of the Week shows like Supernatural, where they're traveling and they're not just in one spot where catastrophe is happening on a weekly basis. Because I lose so much interest in any given plot that does this, that if I can't get into the fact that this is a trope and it's funny, and I'm trying to buy into the realism that people are dying and that means a thing, that means something to this community. And I don't know, I just can't follow it anymore. And unfortunately, that was, as you were saying, Karen, like, a lot of my issue with Teen Wolf. I still haven't caught up from, like, season 5 or whatever they're on. But it just starts to it starts to feel exhausting. And I'm wondering if I'm going to feel that way toward Buffy, or if I can always keep in good spirits about it to be like, la-di-da, it's all good at the end of the day. Buffy's still alive. Do-do-do-do.
Honestly, I think that's what I find so wrong with something like The Vampire Diaries and what I find so right with Buffy is The Vampire Diaries takes itself very seriously. So you kind of think of the world in the most realistic way possible. I mean, the show is designed to be like that. Whereas Buffy is a little bit over the top. It's pretty campy, and they poke fun at these sort of situations. So I think it's meant to be like, yeah, we know this is a problem, but look, we have a story to tell and a show to make. So you're just going to have to suspend some disbelief. And I think Buffy is the right kind of funny where that can work, and yet you still feel for these characters. You're not necessarily laughing at them all the time, just maybe like the situations they find themselves in.
And as you super fans often point out, where have we seen a horror television show set in high school before this? I can't think of any off the top of my head, at least not successful ones. So the fact that this set the standard makes me almost justify shows like Vampire Diaries or Teen Wolf or whatever, trying their best to kind of recreate that magic, to capture lightning in a bottle, to say, sure, characters are going to die, but if they're extraneous characters, we're not going to care about them. We're just going to move on in our plot. But I don't know, because I'm kind of in between whether or not their principal should have been, you know, mourned or anything, because they were just like, darn, I liked him. Like, they cared more about the science teacher than they cared about the principal. And that's strange to me. I don't exactly get that.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's just something we can all take in as we go along. But that wraps up the discussion of that episode. So let's jump into favorite scenes. Mine is just when Willow is too smart for a locked up Xander. I like that she looks like she's getting too close to him, and when he reaches out for her, she jumps away, and she's like, now I know. And it's a very strong moment for Willow in a very difficult situation for her, and I really, really like that. And also, Caitlin, as I was watching this episode, I was like, man, so much happens in that library. And I was starting to get really emotional about some upcoming parts, and I was just like, that library holds so much knowledge and so many experiences for them that it's like, it got really overwhelming for a minute, and I was like, all right, stop thinking about it.
If walls could talk.
Now,
while I don't want you super fans to spoil us, Kristen, do you think that the library is always going to be their hub? Because I'm wondering what happens when they graduate, like where they meet Giles to like hang out or whatever.
I mean, Giles still works at the school and in the library possibly, so maybe they just go to visit him anyway. You know, it's a school library. No, who's how many? We've seen how many kids use the library so far. Like, no yeah. one, except for maybe Owen when he needs to replace his Emily Dickinson book. So, you know, maybe they just come and visit and it's no big deal. But I could totally see Giles, like, maybe leaving the school when they do and taking a real library job, and like maybe they go to a different library or something. I don't know. But I really do like the library as their hub. It's good fun and chock full of helpful information.
You know, I'd almost imagine eventually Giles becoming more of the Lucius to Buffy's Bruce Wayne, and her having this is very punny, a bat cave, so that she can, you know, really get this down to Pat, because she doesn't even seem to like keep stakes on her all the time. At one point, I think in the previous episode, she's like, Giles, do you have a stake on you? And it's really strange to me that she's not more well equipped. She needs like her own like utility belt at this point of like her cross, her water, her stakes, whatever else.
She garlic. Leaves her stakes behind when she goes on a date.
Oh.
She carries them to school, clearly, because she got them out of her bag the first day. But when she goes on a date, that's where she draws the line.
I mean, yeah. I think a utility belt would be a little conspicuous at this point, but it's a good thought. Caitlin, what's your favorite scene?
So I had a hard time picking one from this episode because I don't like it very much. Oh. So I picked when the pig is on the loose and everyone's running away from it, and then Buffy just grabs it and is like, oh, you're so cute, because the pig is cute, and as far as I'm concerned, the pig gets a happy ending.
We can go with that, sure.
There was no body, so.
True. Although, I mean.
There was not a struggle, though. So.
I'll just let you live in your happy little world where the pig lived. Kristen, what's your favorite scene? Because I like this one, too.
It's not an entire scene, but mine is basically the 2 minutes or seemingly so where Xander stares sexily at the 4 popular kids. Like, he stares down his eyebrows, like he tilts his head down and his eyebrows and his eyes become one, and he just kind of watches them as they enter. I think it's the bronze, and just that whole bit just killed me. It's so great. And so it stuck out. Definitely my favorite. Mm-hmm.
And Mitch?
Mine is the whole interaction at the zoo the first time they're there. And in particular, when Xander jumps in to save the geeky artist kid. And I love it because it, A, kind of builds Xander up a bit more in my head. And B, the conversations that Buffy, Willow, and Xander have about this gang of 4 felt very world building to me, because they were referencing like essentially a time jump since the last couple of episodes, that there's been, you know, maybe a couple months that Buffy's been here, so that she would understand the social dynamics at the school very well. Cause I think they go, oh, like they're picking on that kid again. They're so mean. And I liked that a lot because it made me feel like this was a real high school more than just like a set to fight vampires on.
Yeah, people have relationships and interactions maybe off screen that they have to build up while they are on screen. So, you're right. It's nice that way. Favorite lines. Mine's just the funny one where Willow and Xander were watching the zebras mating, and she goes, it's like the Heimlich with stripes. And then just...
Oh, no.
It's so ridiculous, but I love how excited they were about it. It was great.
Poor Willow.
But in reality, Caitlin stole my favorite line, so why don't you go ahead?
So mine is the conversation where Buffy tries to get Giles to figure out what's going on with Xander. So Giles is like, oh, so Xander is taken to teasing the less fortunate? And Buffy's, uh-huh. And there's been a noticeable change in both clothing and demeanor? Yes. And, well, otherwise all his spare time is spent lounging with imbeciles? It's bad, isn't it? It's devastating. He's turned into a 16-year-old boy. Of course, you'll have to kill him. I love Giles and his sarcasm. As I've said before, the older I get, the more I relate to Giles.
I love his dry humor. It's fabulous.
I just love how British he is. And he's like, ta. And I don't know. It's, yeah, he's great. Love it.
In the pilot when he was like, oh, that was very British, wasn't it?
Kristen, what about your favorite line?
Mine comes from Willow, and it's toward the end when she's hanging out with Buffy and they're like talking about the whole hyena thing. And she just says, why couldn't Xander be possessed by a puppy or some ducks? Just the way she said that line just nailed, like, it was great. Just fabulous. Because, yeah, if he were possessed by a puppy, he would be a lot cuter in this episode.
Aww. Such a Willow line.
It is. Yeah.
I'm Mitch. Seeing some relation between Willow and Ron Weasley. Like, why couldn't it be follow the butterflies kind of deal?
It's because of the red hair, isn't it?
It must be the red hair as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mine is... it's so weird when Xander comes up to Buffy in the bronze and says, you took a bath. And she just has to respond, yeah, I often do. I'm actually known for it. And I love it because I'm like, it's so awkward. Like, the thing, the way he does it, and of course it's because he's kind of like hyena spirited, or in Caitlin's opinion, it's just his true spirit coming out. And I love that Buffy just has like no way to react to that. Like, what do you say when someone's like, that you are just friends with, comments on something really specific about your hygiene and sniffs you creep?
You bathed. How dare you bathe?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. All right, well, that wraps up our discussion for these two episodes. Contact info, as usual, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com if you want to email us. @re_watchable if you want to catch us on Twitter. You can comment on this post on hyperbole.com or any of our Buffy-centric posts, or you can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you like us, please, please, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. If you rate us 5 stars, then Mitchell will take you out on a hot date, but he will respect your agency, not like those terrible 90s boys.
I mean, let's be real here. It'll probably end up back at your house, me braiding your hair, us watching Gilmore Girls, and eating popcorn. So
I was really worried where that was going to go for like half a second.
That was intentional.
Okay. I could handle that ladies' date. That would be really, really fun.
It would be. Yeah. I mean,
that's the only way I know how to treat a lady, like a bestie.
What if Gilmore we get Girls an rules. iTunes review from a boy and it's not a ladies' date?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
let's leave that to the imagination.
Awkward.
Okay, listener feedback. We got an email who says, good morrow, fellow Buffy rewatchers. Rob here to say, as far as season one goes, this episode isn't bad. I think he's talking about the one with Amy. I especially like that this is the first episode of the show that has a title that is also a pun within the plot. They call it Witch instead of The Witch, since the characters have to figure out which witch is actually doing the witching. Also, the scene where Buffy says, guess what, I feel better, then we see Amy's mom fly across the room. So awesome. Until next time, this is Rob saying the world is definitely doomed. Aw, that was cute. Thanks, Rob. Caitlin, would you like to take Rebecca's tweet?
Sure. Rebecca Klaus says, yay and congrats on the awesome start of Buffy. Can I add Dawson's Creek to the list of shows to consider? And I'll leave that to you, Karen.
Yeah, we can add it to the list. I think Ariana was the one that added in Dawson's Creek would all at once be the most wonderful, most terrible show to recap ever. I think Natalie would be down, honestly. I think she really loves Dawson's Creek.
I could be a super fan. Chris, do you understand what this does to me? No, I love Dawson's Creek. Back in the day, that was quality show, and they use a lot of big words, so, you know, you can learn something too.
Yeah, I mean, we're always adding shows to the list, so that's not a problem at all. Right now, we're definitely not thinking of what the next show is going to be because we're still trying to figure out how exactly we're going to do Buffy, because it's quite a big chunk of show to take on. But
we have about 12 years to go.
So. Yeah, we've got time. So Dawson's Creek can definitely be added to the list, and we'll just see what happens. We're going to be 86, and we're still going to be podcasting on Rewatchable, so... Yes. It's fine. We'll have time.
And Supernatural will still be going, so we won't be able to do that one.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know, sometimes I think about the shows that I watch now that I'm like, if we did them and I was a super fan, like Teen Wolf would be intense. We wouldn't do Teen Wolf because we have not another Teen Wolf podcast. But like, I don't know. Kristen, I really want to do The Following so yes. badly.
It's only 3 seasons and it's like 15 episodes a season. We could get through it really.
And then we could be really angry about how it got canceled all over again because that's
especially because it got canceled at the best part. Like it was going someplace.
Yeah.
It's getting really good.
The guy who plays Lucius Malfoy in Harry Potter, didn't he star in that show?
No.
No.
It's not Jason Isaacs. It's
Jason Isaac.
Kevin Bacon.
James Purefoy. No. James Purefoy plays the creepy guy. Oh, but okay. He wasn't Lucius Malfoy. That was Jason Isaacs.
Right. Gotcha.
Yep. Okay. I was like, Kevin Bacon? But it's okay because he has his own Tremors show coming up, so it's totally fine. Moving on. Mitch, would you like to take this last one?
Yes, and I absolutely do not understand it, but I have an idea. So the bottle episode wrote to us, I keep breaking into the Kimmy Schmidt theme tune as soon as anyone says hypeable or rewatchable. They alive, damn it. I assume, though no one explained this to me yet, in case you know it, this is my guess, that they say the words hypeable and rewatchable in that song, in that theme song. Is that what we're getting here? What is it?
Do we
talk about that show a lot on another podcast that I don't know about?
I think they're just happy that we're here and alive.
Oh, I haven't heard the theme song. So it was just like happy-go-lucky, like, yay, it's time for rewatchable, like that kind of feel.
Well, they say they alive, damn it, at the end, and it's like the catchiest part of the theme song. You should look up the theme song. It's not going to spoil anything, okay. And it's really fun. But yeah, they definitely don't say hypeable in the Kimmy Schmidt theme song. Although if they did,
cool if they're like,
we would be famous.
This show is so hypeable, you're going to want to rewatch it. It would be so great.
Okay, now we need our own rewatchable theme song.
Yes, written by Mitch. We did. If you look up the video, I promise you, you will be humming or singing it all day long. So, you know, warning.
Yeah.
That theme song is addicting.
Okay, listeners, if you want us to have a theme song and or if you would like to contribute lyrics to it, let us know. And thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week for 2 more episodes of Buffy. And one of them is quite important, I do believe. So we'll just see what happens then. Until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. I was the only one without a K sound. Caitlin, Karen, Kristen, Mitch.
You ruin everything, Mitch. Just kidding. I love you. Where did my pen go? Oh. Okay.
I get it. Pens are more important than me, Karen.
Yes. Yes, they are. Congratulations on not spoiling anything this week.
Yeah.
Good job, Mitch.
I know. Well, such an accomplishment.